Welcome to the Full 60 featuring Craig Custance and presented by The Athletic. Each week, we'll dive into the biggest stories in hockey while bringing in unique voices to entertain and explain all aspects of the game.
Hey, this is Craig, and welcome to this week's episode of The Full 60. I am very excited to be joined by Arizona Coyotes GM Bill Armstrong, right in the middle, in the thick of things. So we're going to jump in so he can get back to work. Bill, thank you for doing this. I know it's crazy right now.
Yeah, it's a busy time for sure, but thanks for having me on the podcast, and looking forward to chat with you and updating you on how things are going in the desert.
All right, well, let's start right now, very much in the moment, because it's funny, there was a lot of speculation surrounding the Coyotes even before you took the job, and I don't know if it was your fellow GMs, you know, circling and saying, hey, we've got some opportunity here, or what it was. And I think a lot of people expected, massive changes and salaries got to go and all this stuff. But I feel like you've been patient. What's been the approach, or what's been this week like for you?
Well, it is a patient approach, because you never want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
I think whenever you take over, there's a little good and a little bad of what the previous people have done. So you got to make sure that you go through very carefully and slowly and patiently, and make sure that you make the right moves and don't get too excited. So once we got in here, we got our staff, together, we made some decisions and went over some stuff and planned some stuff for the future. What our main thing was just to be calm and put together the best team that we think we can possibly for next year, and that's what we've done. We went out and added some fourth line guys, third line guys in free agency, and it's been a very positive effect, and we're starting to see how, you know, we're starting to come along in the shape of identity, how we want to play with some of the guys that we've added.
So let me ask you this, because it's funny. We want to make quick judgments on how everyone's offseason is going. And so I made a bunch of phone calls and was trying to get people's assessment. And I asked one of your fellow execs about Arizona. And he's like, from his perspective, he's like, I don't know, you know, where they're headed, right? Is it, hey, let's build off of the postseason success, or is it, we have a new GM and we want to strip it down and put in our new identity? So I'm going to ask the man, who's orchestrating it. Is it to build off? What's your approach?
That's a good question. There's some tricky issues that we have because of the, I don't know if you want to say the NHL, was basically investigated the Arizona Coyotes and found out there was a form of, cheating or whatever they felt on their side, and there's picks taken away. So because of that, there's an interesting situation that you go into next year's draft. You just got through a draft where you only picked from the fourth round back, which I wasn't able to be a part of. And now you go into the next draft and you don't have a first rounder. Because of the fine or whatever the penalty laid by the NHL. So there's some interesting circumstances. And then you have some guys in your team that are going to become free agents at the end of this year that are good players for us and that are impact players. So there's a lot of there's a lot of things in the air. What we've tried to do is look at it in perspective. How can we be the best on opening night? And we explored a lot of different opportunities with the assets that we have from all the players. Can we move this person? Can we do this? What can we do to be better? And that's going to continue going through the course of the year. But we didn't panic with anything, and we just went through and put together the best team that we could possible. But there are some questions to be answered in the future, and that's going to we're going to move slowly on that, and we've got some time.
When you say move slowly, is it move slowly this offseason, or is it move slowly over the course of the next year, right?
The course of the year, and trying to better the franchise and better your team as you move forward. So, there's always trades that happen during the course of the year, and that can help your team. So you're always going to explore them.
But like as it's built now, you expect your roster to look pretty similar to an opening night to what, yeah, what I'm looking at in cap friendly right now.
Yeah, absolutely. What you see right now will pretty much be how we open up on opening night.
Okay, right off the hop, you get faced with the Oliver Ekman-Larsson situation. That's a challenging, like, I mean, it's rough, right? Like, that was percolating before, you know, we knew who was going to be the GM of the Coyotes. Now that it's settled and, you know, he's coming back, what was your process? What was your approach there?
Well, it was hard on the player. It was hard on the, myself, because I was walking into that. And it's something that just got thrown at me as I walked through the door. Right. So I reached out to Oliver with a nice conversation. I just said, hey, let's see what plays out in the next 2 weeks. Let's touch base after it's over. And that's where we're kind of moving now. We're in the process. I just put a call into him yesterday just to see how he's doing in that. So, you know, we're moving forward from this point. And, you know, he's our captain. He plays 23 minutes a night. He's a huge part of the Coyotes. So, you know, we're expecting for him to start the season and be our leader.
So Oliver was receptive to these conversations? Like, you feel like it's going to be a positive situation moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's really, number one, he's a really good person. He's somebody that has had good impact with our organization. And, you know, he had some other choices to go out in free agency, and he chose to sign with the Coyotes. And he's somebody that we depend on every single night. So now it's just good to go back and get, you know, have a conversation with him and see how he's preparing for the upcoming season.
So I found it fascinating. So you're a guy who has built his reputation on the draft, and and you have to sit through you get this breakthrough. Guys wait a long time to get their first GM job, and you've got to sit that out. First of all, where did you watch it? And are we really to believe you had no input? Come on, you can be honest now that it's over.
Well, here's the thing. What I didn't in a lot of avenues. What I was able to do is to put together structure.
Okay.
So what I was able to do was hire people to come in and run the draft. And I was very comfortable with Ryan Jankowski, who had worked for Buffalo and the Islanders, and brought him on board. So he kind of came in on the first day of the meetings and put everything together. So from that point on, you know, it was great for me. I was allowed to say, hey, listen, this is the way that you're going to build the list, but have nothing to do with the list, and put the right people in place. So it was great. I mean, I had good comfort in knowing that he had been in the field all year long, and he knew all the players. So it was on him.
And same thing. So were you just watching it at home, or like what was?
I was in a different part of the arena. I was in the coach's room, way in the back, Barry, just watching it. And it was painful because it moved so slowly.
It was painful for everyone. Yes.
Yeah, and we didn't pick, you know, till the fourth. So it was like, it's just a painful process. You know, like you said, there you are, you know, having your big day of impact, and you're, you know, you got nothing to do with it. You're off in some other office. So that was, but you know, I think also too, it was pretty good in the sense that maybe as an organization, we weren't set up to pick with all the changes and everything going on.
Right.
So next year will be a different animal. We'll be prepared, and we've got our staff in place.
My guess is you'll have a first round pick next year. That's my, I'm going to go on the record now and say,
I like that prediction. I like how you're talking. Yeah. I like that. You could be right.
I'm going to say you're not going to go your first two drafts without getting back into the first round.
It's nice when you're picking in the first round. You know, after the draft, you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was interesting because I didn't realize this until I went back and was reading some comments you made going into, you know, after the hire and everything. When you were running the Blues drafts, you never picked higher than 20th, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And we went through different phases because when I worked with Jarmo, Kekalainen, and I was kind of brought in with, and he hired me, you know, we were in a different era. You know, we were having these drafts where we'd go into the first round and, you know, get three drafts, like get three picks. It's a fun day.
Right.
You walk without with Eller, Cole, and Perron. It's a pretty good day, you know. You don't pick to the fourth round. It's, you know, you don't feel as good about yourself. But, and then when I kind of took over, we were going through a different era. We were good, so we kind of had to kind of find players in different areas of the draft.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've always been very successful. The Blues kind of picking 20 back.
Yeah.
We found Oshie and, you know, Perron in those areas, and Robert Thomas. I mean, that's been kind of our home pick and back. But then, you know, I think Doug, as soon as I started, was like, listen, we got to hit on some other ones, you know? And yeah. I felt like we did a good job. And, you know, even find Joel Edmondson or Dunn in the second.
Yeah.
Bennington in the third with Pareko. I mean, we had some big hits. So that's a credit to my staff, too.
So when a GM says that, like every GM feels that way, yeah. Did you change an approach? Or like, what do you do when a guy says, hey, we got to get better outside the first round? Because it's not like people weren't trying previously to pick.
Yeah, one. No, it's, I like it. I think when, and I'll plan on using that strategy a little bit with our amateur staff. I think when you give them goals and mandates and say, listen, everybody's supposed to hit in the first round. Like, right. You know, everybody's supposed to hit. But it's what can you know, you're really good as a staff when you're hitting and you're finding the Parecos, you know, in the third round or the Binningtons in the third round. That shows you can draft. So I kind of like that challenge, you know. But yeah, Doug was really good about that stuff too. And we had implemented some other stuff, and we got Samuel Blaze in the sixth round. So I thought the staff, you know, myself responded to that challenge, you know.
The Colton Pareko story, maybe Coyotes fans haven't heard it, but I love that, how clandestine that was to select him.
Yeah, he's great. Like he's an interesting hockey player because of his brain and the way that he thinks about improvement. And every time that you meet him, he's getting better. And you know, every time we saw him, he put on about 10 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, and he just got better. And he was in Alaska, you know, of all places to play college hockey. He'd go on the road. And when they went on the road, they went for like full 2 weeks, which is hard, right? So you're going into Michigan, you know, 1 weekend, then you go to Michigan State the next weekend, but you're staying over there for almost 2 weeks. And he that's a hard schedule on a college kid. And he just got better and better. But how we kind of found him is we get somebody on the inside actually was good friends with Doug Armstrong and said, you know, I don't know much about scouting, but you got to see this kid, you know, and he was over, it was actually somebody that was traveling with his team over in Russia. He was on this tier two team. And so we sent our guys in, and Marshall Davidson did an amazing job. And he went in there, and we only went to places that nobody could see us at. So it wasn't like when he played in Calgary or play, right. We were going, you know, Fort Murray, we were all these different places that were way up there, and you know, our guys were just like, this guy, and they kept pushing. I can remember Marshall Davidson in the meetings, he was like, you gotta take him in, you know, in the first round. I'm like, we're not taking him in the first round. He's like, he's that good. I went to see him and I was like, he was a good player, but you know, he looked a little bit different than he does today, but there was something there. And then we figured out that we went into the game, and you know, nobody was really tracking him as much. I think everybody in the NHL felt like they could get him later on. And we figured out, hey, listen, if we pick him in the third, we can get him. So that's what we did. And from the moment he's come into our organization, he's been a game changer.
He really has. Like, that's, you know, getting – like, every rebuild or every championship team has those success stories. Like, you can't succeed without him. You can't rely only on that first-round pick. You need the Colton Parecos.
You do, and that's the thing is, you know, when we went to this draft, like I said, I could prepare structure for our staff, but I said, like, we have to get one player. There's no excuses from the fourth round back. It's hard, but we need to get one player in this draft. So, and I think it's good to have a mandate with your scouting staff and say, listen, this is what we expect, you know, from the staff. But I think also what happens at times too is sometimes you might strike out in the first round, but you might land, you know, somebody in the second or third, and you still end up walking out of that draft because the draft is an interesting animal. It's, you know, you've got to be tuned in, and your guys have to be on the road. And nowadays you have to be on analytics, you have to be on video, and you've got to be tuned into where you can get players, and you'll have to be tuned into, you know, what are your identity that you're trying to draft for your team. So there's a famous guy that I used to scout with in Quebec, Simone Nollet, and he used to say to me, he used to work for Philly back in the day, and he used to say, Bill, if you draft small player, 100% of the time you end up with small team. And I always remember that. That was his thing, you know. And he's right. If you draft a certain way, that's kind of what you end up with. So you know, my job is to have influence over the staff and implant them with, hey, listen, this is our vision. This is what we're looking for in the players we want coming through the door.
What would you say your philosophy in drafting is then? So like you can tell some teams, it's pretty clear. Like they're, you know, Toronto doesn't mind drafting small, and they'll fill out the roster mm-hmm. later with the kind of the other pieces. Yeah. What would you say your philosophy is? And you're not allowed to say take best player available. We're going to okay. remove that answer from the equation.
Yeah, I think you have to draft around the position. So if you're going to draft a guy that's, you know, plays a certain part of your team, you have to have a thought process of what you're drafting. Like, do you want him skilled in that position? Do you want him big? Has he got, you know, like there's a lot of things that I think that are in depth that you have to make sure that you can't just draft a guy in the position and not talk about his skill, his skating, his character, his speed. Like, you have to draft around the position. That's an important thing for me. And there's simple guidelines that you can implant with your scouts. But, you know, at some point in the draft, we also give freedom to our scouts. We're not going to say, hey, listen, you always have to do it our way, because there will be the small guy. There will be the Martin St. Louis. There will be the Mark Stone that can't skate that well in junior. And you don't want to limit your scouts from drafting those players. And that's what I think is important, is that you have to guide. You have to, you know, give them the vision. And tell them, hey, these are the things. But there's a point in the draft too when it's their choice.
Yeah,
they just have to be right.
that's right. They better be right. I found it interesting because you mentioned Yarmo in learning under him, or I'm assuming you learned under him, but you were with him.
Yes, I did.
And then you mentioned Pareko and the scout saying, hey, we got to get him now. Like Yarmo, very famously, like, you know, he's not afraid to be bold, right? They have their list. Mm-hmm. They go off of it. Did it again this year in the first round. Took a guy that people were like Googling on TV to figure out who it was. You know, in terms of your philosophy there, like if you are sold that Colton Pareko is a first round, you know, and maybe you're not, but like how do you balance value when you're drafting them versus, you know, grabbing them in the right slot?
It's a huge question because you don't want to miss that player. But then again, you don't want to step up too early when you can knock off guys. And that's an experience that's learned over time. There's a couple of things about experienced scouts. You know, number one, it takes time on your eyes. It's almost a 10-year process to be a really good scout. Mm. It takes you 2 years just to be able to walk into the rink and watch a game and say, whether you like the player or not, that guy's going to go in this round. Like that's just 2 years of going through the draft. So when you go in your third year of scouting, you can kind of project that. 10 years in, you can start to rearrange the list in your mind, and then you get good at little things like, you know, who's at the game, or, you know, just you can piece it together, or, hey, this team likes to draft this guy, these type of players. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all that plays into factor, and that's the greatest thing about when you're dialed into scouting is it's a very chess-like mentality in your brain, and it's always challenging. It never gets old. Every single year, you're picking in a different range for the most part, and you're trying to figure out a different player. And if you like a job that's challenging, that's a very challenging job. And there's also a lot of negativity in the sense that you're only right 2 out of the 7 times if you're really good at what you do. Think about that.
That's right.
You know, as a staff. So
I couldn't deal with that failure, I don't think. You know what I mean? Like that's hard.
Yeah, and you gotta come back in the door. Like one of the I don't know if I could tell this story properly, but we took this guy in Sweden and we went to see him a couple years later, and I was with this scout who's one of the best in the field. I won't mention his name, but he worked for us. And, you know, we'd pick this guy in the second round, and he was a bust. Yeah. And in this guy had put his name down, and he had stamped it, and we watched the player play, and he just looked at me and he goes, yeah, like, where do you want to go for lunch? Like he didn't talk about him because he knew he was done. He's just like, where do you want to go for lunch? Yeah, I don't think he's going to play. And then we walked out of the rink, you know, but his mentality was like, yeah, it was a mistake, learned, moved on, next. And it didn't bother him, where some people become paralyzed in the field. And even though they've had, you know, they didn't draft well, then they become paralyzed the next time. And, you know, so this guy didn't bother him. He was like, and he's a great scout. That. He just kept swinging. So it's like a home run hitter. There's a lot of strikeouts.
How, as a manager now, do you make sure your scouts have that mentality and not like, I just want to keep my job mentality that sometimes you seep into?
That is important. That is there is a balance there. The good scouts, the ones that are dialed in to making you a Stanley Cup winner, mm-hmm. want to swing. They don't want the fourth liners. Like nothing wrong with that. They don't at some point they want to swing. And they want to get the difference maker. And they're willing to fight for it. Inside that room with your scouts, the good ones, confidence for me comes from a source. And their source is that they know the player so well from studying them video-wise, seeing them live, studying them analytically. They're concrete. They know his character inside and out. They stand up and they're not going to back down. The bad scout doesn't back down, but that's just out of ego.
That's right. And you got to be able to identify that, right? Like this guy just doesn't Absolutely. Want, he's just, we're in a room and he's trying to win an argument versus.
Correct.
Does he really Correct. Believe it? Yeah. There's so much in here. There's so much interesting things in here. I want to go back to, you said the two years versus 10 years when you're scouting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you hit that 2 year mark, like what looks differently on the ice, when you've got 2 years under your belt?
Yeah, the players all change. So a lot of times you get a guy from a coaching background, he'll come in and watch games, he's watching structure, he's watching, all the little things, and all of a sudden, every year your eyes kind of change as a scout. And, there's some things that you pick up where you all of a sudden you'll go and sometimes your failures where you draft a guy that doesn't work out. There's a reason that they don't. And you kind of take a little bit of that, like whether it's pace in the game for me, on this particular player, we didn't see that. And all of a sudden, boom, next year you're dialed in. I said, like, that guy will never play. He can't keep up with pace. And you put more of a priority on it because you've learned from it. So you're constantly learning in the field or there's a skating glitch or there's a character flaw or something. There's always something to be learned and you're always getting better. So your eyes every year change along with your mind. Mm. And, sometimes you can just meet players and you shake their hand and you can look. I know it sounds weird, but you look at their neck, their wrist size, how they shake your hand, and the top 10 guys in the draft all are the same. Like they all have confidence. And of course you're going to have confidence, right? Like everything's gone well. You're a stud. You're 6'2". You can score. You've got all this confidence. You're walking in. But some of the other guys, they don't have that, they're going to be just as good, but they don't have that. So that's the tough part. But you're judging them about, how they think and are they an improver? Do they have the will to come into work every day? Have they faced, some form, of grit in their life where it hasn't gone right for them, adversity, something. And you're looking for that with them. And there's a lot of great things that kind of you roll through your mind when you're meeting those guys. But it's your eyes and your mind do change and it constantly changes as you evolve as a scout.
Yeah. And so what I find interesting when someone like yourself gets put in this position, like I remember, again, to go back to Yarmo, maybe a year into his tenure at Columbus, I was asking, hey, are you going to be at wherever? It was some sort of scouting question. He's like, no, like I'm the GM now. I'm, I hired people to do this. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course you won't be there. Like you have all this experience. You're extremely valuable, right? As in having that. But we also always hear about the GMs that drop in for one viewing and form an opinion and it's a disaster, right? So how much will you be involved or now are you like, no, I'm a manager. Like this is not my job anymore.
Yeah, it's not my job anymore. My job is one of the things that, I was hired for is to put an organization. The way that I look at it is this: if to win a Stanley Cup, you got to build two organizations, one off the ice and one on. Mm-hmm. So my main goal, what they've hired me to do is to put the best scouting structure along with the best scouts in place and let them do their job. And that's the way that I look at it. I think one of the things that I've had an advantage is that I know all the good ones and I know the right structure. That's my strength. So that has been snapped together and we're moving forward with that. And, also on the pro side too, I think that's another, because I've been in that field. So it's easy for me to align the structure of the team. And my thought process is this, is that if you can just get the right hockey person, and you keep putting good hockey people on, the next thing you know, they start drafting good hockey players or acquiring good hockey players. And you're just trying to stack them one on top of the next. Next thing you know, you have a good team. So that thought process has been with me is build the right structure off the ice, get the right people on board. and get the right vision implanted in their heads.
And so you came in right away and made some changes, right? I mean, you know, Lindsay Hofford is out. Some scouts are moved on. I actually think Arizona's drafted well. Like, I look at the pool of young players. You know, I look, I'm like, hey, I like some of these players. How much, like, what went into your decision making into, okay, I got to put structure in, and I also have to make decisions on who to keep almost immediately?
Yeah. I think as a GM, and no disrespect to some of the people that, you know, that have come and gone through the organization, but you have to be very comfortable, you know, with who's working underneath you. And, you know, as a GM, you know, there's uncomfortable decisions that you have to make when you come through the door, and you have a plan, and you have to go through that process of doing that. And, you have to make tough decisions. Unfortunately, I had to make some tough decisions coming through the door, and I'm okay with that, because I wanted to make sure that I had implemented my vision with my people and move forward with that. So, yeah, there are some tough decisions that you have to make.
Okay. I want to take a quick break, and then I do want to get into the structure and the plan, and especially, like, from what I understand, your plan was pretty thorough going into this job. So let me just take a quick break here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
My understanding, and I don't want to tell the story incorrectly, but, you know, this job opens up, and I've read you spent 2 weeks caved up in a hole coming up with a 5-year plan.
Yes.
Can you put us in that room and what that looks like? That sounds amazing. I want to do that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it was my first process of going through an interview, and I went through the interview process with Florida and kind of, you know, built my game plan for their team, and I did it kind of when I was in the bubble. So I kind of built this foundation of what I wanted to say and put it together and present it to them. And then, you know, they called back a couple of weeks later and said, listen, we're going to hire, you know, Billy Zito. And so, you know, obviously I'm a competitor. So I wanted to go back and, kind of whether I got another opportunity for an interview or not, I wanted to go back and make sure that if the opportunity came up again, I was better prepared. So I when I got out of the bubble, I said hi to my wife, long time no see. We went out for dinner, and then basically I locked myself in the office and I went back to what I had presented in Florida and retooled it. And a lot of my thoughts on hiring coaches, managing coaches, getting into, you know, what I thought of the pro coverage, you know, and how to make it better, you know, how to find players in the American League, you know, how to acquire assets if you don't have picks, or how to be better at scouting, you know, and, you know, how to get the competitive advantage when you're amateur scouting. And I can't reveal some of that stuff, but I wanted to get all my thoughts down on paper. So
yeah,
it was one thing to get it all down on paper, to get it in an order that somebody could read it and understand it. So that was my other process. And halfway through, you know, Arizona called and they said, hey, we'd like to interview you. So then I started tailoring it to them and started studying their team. So that was the process that I went through. And then I started the process of meeting them, you know, on the Zoom calls. And then they said, hey, listen, we'd like you to come in person and fly down to Vegas and meet our owner.
Yeah.
So I packed up a suit and you know, a pair of shorts and headed down to Vegas. And you know, I met with them, and then, you know, they offered me the job. So I never went home.
Wow.
Yeah, I never went home. So you know, that was kind of how that kind of happened. And when I came through the door, because I had studied them, I had a fairly good idea of what I wanted to get accomplished right out of the gate. So that really kind of helped me. So when I walked through the door, I was pretty thorough in understanding where we were moving to.
Was there a particular part of of your vision that you could tell really connected with them? Like they were like, oh, that's good.
Well, I think one of the things that I'm pretty good at is communicating with people. And I think my reputation is good. I've had an NHL contract basically since I've been 19 years old. And I've done, pretty much almost every job in the industry. So from playing to assistant coaching to coaching, to being a part-time scout, to being a full-time scout, to crossover scout, to running the scouting department, assistant GM. So, I've had all these different, things I've done, and I can pretty much sit almost in any room and have a conversation with somebody because I've kind of done that job.
Right.
So I think that's one thing they liked. I think they liked the fact that I could communicate with them because, our ownership group are really good at business. That's what they're good at. They own 45 different companies, from banks to casinos to media outlets. And they wanted somebody that could translate hockey to them and be able to speak their language, and get them to speak, the language where they could understand hockey, but at the same time, understand that they're business people. They want to run this like a business. So that, I think that was one of the things that they liked about me is that I could translate that to them.
As you're going through this, I mean, stuff about this ownership group was starting to surface, questions about kind of financial issues with them.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? And how much of that line of questioning came up when you're talking to them?
Well, it did. I mean, you wanted to understand, number one, their vision. Where do they want to go with this organization? And where are they moving to? And the second question is, what about all this noise you hear around the Coyotes? And right. What I found was really interesting was about the owner, Alex Morello, is he owned a bank and two casinos, an NHL franchise, and 10 media outlets. They don't hand that out to get a casino gaming license. I mean, right. They're very thorough. I mean, they just don't hand that stuff out. And to own a bank, right. You can't just be some cowboy in the desert just doing your own thing on your own terms. They're respected business people. So I think that was one of the things that I learned about them and I liked. And I think the other thing were simple things that I'd kind of learned from my dad working with him as a young kid is the way that he looked after his employees and he greeted his employees, from being in the casino to the driver, bringing his wife to dinner. It was a family affair. So I was really impressed with that. And a lot of the people that surrounded him had worked with him for 30, 15, 10 years. So to me, that those are impressive things. And I felt that he was vested. And the more I dug, the more I realized I don't think there's many owners in the Coyotes history that have spent the cap like he has. He invested in them being good. So I think there is some noise that surrounds it. But for me, I was very comfortable with him and where the vision of what he had for the organization.
You've mentioned this, but you said, you had people around hockey texting you saying, hey, be careful. How did you balance that with, hey, I have an opportunity here? I mean, you only get one shot at putting yourself in the right place, right?
It's a great question. I had to weigh that. I had to weigh that, with my wife and saying, okay, we're going in. You can't be in and out on this job. You're either in or you're out. And the thing that I felt comfortable about it was when I came down here, even more so when I took the job, it's like you're in a hockey bubble. So, we had guys like Daryl Plandowski come down. That's a hockey guy, Ryan Jankowski is a hockey guy, have all your scouts in here, Scott Walker, he's a hockey guy. And this is like a hockey bubble. Your hotel is pretty much on top of the rink and there's 50 places to eat, within, 15 seconds of leaving the rink. So it's like, you're just surrounded by hockey when you're down here, even though you're in the desert. It's just it's like the hockey bubble, and you just get to work and you get in a little cave downstairs and you go to work with hockey people. And it's just, for me, once everybody got down here and you got everybody to see what it was like and they got to meet the ownership group and the executives and everything, they leave really excited about this franchise. And that's the most important thing, is when the people that work with you are excited about where you're moving and they believe in the ownership group. That's an exciting part.
It is interesting. Like, to me, from the outside, you look for indicators. Like, okay, you take the job, you know, it's, you're like, okay, but then you're able to get a guy like Daryl Plandowski, right? Who like, those drafts in Tampa are ridiculous. Like,
yeah, they're like good. He's good.
Daryl could pick where he's going, I'm sure, at some point, if he couldn't already. You know, yeah. Like, what was the sales job to him?
You know, and that's interesting, right? Like, so you're standing on the outside, you're yeah. now GM, and you're getting people to believe in the vision that you have, but also Daryl's got a great owner in Tampa, you know, that he's worked for a number of years. Yeah. He knows how right. stable it is, you know, and I applaud him in wanting to kind of take that challenge and come on board with us. And even same thing with Ryan Janikowski, those guys just kind of jumped on board, and I think it had to do with, they trusted me. I yeah. think that was a big part of it. And they had seen me in the field. They know how I am, and they know my work ethic and how I treat people. So I think that's a part of getting people to come to the desert is, you know, I've been in hockey for a long time and I have a good reputation. And so I think on that, people, you know, joined us because of that. So it's been good. I've been really excited about the personnel that we've added.
You've said, you know, culture has to change here, and we hear it all the time. You know, culture is a word used yeah. a lot, and it's almost one of those things, you don't, until you feel it or see it, you know, it's, the Blues are a good example. Like, this was a team that seemed to have this mm-hmm. problem breaking mm-hmm. through, but all of a sudden it felt different when you went to St. Louis, or for me, you yeah. know, to cover a series, you're like, oh, this is a winning team. And like, for me, it turned when the Blues beat the Blackhawks. Remember that one series?
Oh, I agree with you. And Troy Brouwer put it in the net. He missed it three times. It was like it was yep. in slow motion. It took a year That's to right. happen for him to put that puck in the net. But that was a big moment for the Blues. That was getting over the hump for us because of the fact that we had faced championship teams
right.
with L.A. we'd lost to, and Chicago continued to lose to. And that was a point where we were, I think, as every franchise has to go to the point where you're really good and you get beat. And then, you yes. know, Tampa had it where they went through and got beat. They got swept, you know, then they get pissed off and come back and say, listen, we're going to be dialed in. And the Blues had the same thing. So we just did it the other way, where we went to dead last place and then said, okay, let's do it. It's never been done before. right. We went that route, but it's also, I think you always have to go through a little bit of adversity, and you have to that. So when you talk about culture in the desert,
yeah.
you know, there's, they've, you know, Rick Tocchet, you know, he's good at what he does as a coach, and you know, they've made some steps. My thing is to make the final step, and the one thing that I've realized, everybody wants to come to the desert. Everybody's calling you. It's not a hard place to recruit to. It's a you know, it's a beautiful place to live, but my thing is, nobody wants to bleed in the desert. You know, and that's what we have to make sure that, you know, I get all these agents call me and say, oh, don't trade my players. You know, I know his name's been out there. Don't do that. You know, but they really like it there. You know, if you like it here, you got to bleed here. You got to be mm-hmm. committed to this team 150% with your body language, how hard you play each shift, what you give to your teammates, how hard you train, how hard you encourage your other teammates to train. You've got to be dialed in the desert if you want to play here, because this is a great place. It's a yeah. great place to come to win a championship, and that's what we're, those are the words that are coming out of our mouth, you know, all the time, and we want people committed to that.
I think we've seen that especially right now with Vegas, right? Like, everybody, like, if players are waiving their no trade, it's like Vegas is the one team they're willing to go to or whatever, because
yeah.
for various reasons. So I don't think getting players is hard. Like, you're right. It's okay, but we also have to do it without a lot of like scrutiny, right? Like, there's not a ton right. of media scrutiny. Like, how do you take it from, hey, this is a place, a destination for all the positive reasons, to, but we also have to do the hard things?
Well, I think, you know, the player, there's a different type of pressure, right? So if you play in Montreal, the media,
yeah.
The fans, you know, you go out to get your laundry, you go out for dinner, you know, if you're not good, it's not a great place to live, right?
right?
So there's a little bit of pressure to play, you know, and keep the standards high. You know, in the desert, you know, or in sometimes places that hockey's not the number one sport, maybe it's football or baseball or something else, you know, you can kind of hide. You can go to dinner after a bad loss and nobody knows who you are and have a great time. So there's different pressures that you have to create and the standards that you have to keep as an organization. So, you know, those are the things that we constantly work on to make sure that we form our own internal pressure on the players through your leadership group and all the little things that you do.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, a couple things before we wrap up. I do want to get, like you mentioned, you've basically done every job in, you know, in a hockey organization.
Yeah.
So at some point you had to make a conscious decision from coaching to management. What, you know, what went into that? Because you were coaching right away, right? Like that was
early on. I was coach. I think I was head coach in the American League, which is unusual, but I was a head coach, I think, maybe at 30, 31.
Yeah.
Some of the players that I was coaching, I played with. So I was really young to be a head coach. But for me, it was like going to law school. Like you go to law school for 4 years, you get your degree. I kind of got my coaching degree, and it helps me understand the way coaches think. It helps me understand to put them at ease or to open their eyes. And, you know, as a coach, you know, sometimes you can only see what's in front of you. It's a day-to-day thing. In management, you kind of see a bigger, broader perspective of the potential. You know, this is what. So that's what you're trying to do. But I think all those steps that you take, you know, even like I was telling someone the other day, it was like you get in these situations where I was running these 3-on-3 leagues, you know, and I would have these massive kids. Like it was like 590 kids would come in and play in my league on a Sunday. And you had to manage all these people, and you had to manage the referees, the Zamboni driver, the ice was melting, it was the middle of summer. You had to find a way to pull off the league, and you had, you know, 50 employees come in on one day and work for you. And, you know, you wondered, you know, here I am in the middle of a West Warwick, Rhode Island rink in the middle of July running this thing, you know. And you're running like, why? Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? I'm like what am I doing? You know, and all these things, these steps that you go through, what I was doing was learning how to manage people and motivate people to do their job better and be very efficient at getting everybody in places and getting them to do their job and prioritize. And you didn't realize that at the time, it was at a smaller level. But if you can do it there, it's almost the same, just you're doing it at the NHL level of running your entire staff. So I think all the things that I've gone through, and I've even sold tickets in the summer for an organization. So it's a great experience to go through. And you know, I did a small speech for our organization yesterday about, you know, what, you know, they're selling tickets. It's hard right now. It's hard. Like it's a hard job to do. So,
yeah. Yeah. Cause we don't know you don't know what it's going to look like. I think it's the impossible job to do right now.
It's impossible.
How do you sell tickets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's, all those little things that I've done in my past have helped me move into this job and feel comfortable in this job.
I think, and this will be the last time we get into it. I think, you might have taken the hardest GM position from my perspective. That's open. Like for any number of reasons, from draft picks to it's capped out to who knows with the owner. And you said, like, I like challenges. You've made that, you know, clear. Like, and your actions back it up by your willingness to take the job. What in your past, like, do you have a challenge that you looked at and you're like, okay, that was something that I really, that helped shape me, or that challenge is what got me where I am now?
I think some of my failures have made me stronger. And so, you know, and they've helped me. I know when I went into coach in the East Coast, like, I was a one man band, and I didn't have anybody to throw ideas off. I didn't have anybody around me that could get stuff done. It was like you're paralyzed, and it was the hardest job because you dealt with immigration, housing, trades, like coaching, practice, scheduling. Like it was impossible. And the one thing that I learned about that job is I need good people around me. That's the one thing is I need smart people around me. So when I went to work in St. Louis, you know, the one thing that I learned through that whole experience and going from there into St. Louis was Doug Armstrong was really good at putting great people around him to give him different ideas and give him different angles to see different things. And I loved that collaborative effort where honesty, you know, was very good in the room. Not everybody gave the same answer. Not everybody fell in line. People came and said what they wanted to. And that's one thing that I loved about being in St. Louis is, you know, you had to be able to show up and bring your A game, because at times you had Marty Brodeur, Larry Robinson, Dave Taylor, Al McGinnis, Keith Kachuk, you had Larry Plough was a former GM. Yeah. Peter Shirelli was even in the room at time. I mean, you had to show up and bring your A game when you're speaking and you're, you know, talking about a certain theory about what you believed in. And I love that, but I believe in having good people around. So I think sometimes when you fail in life, that's been my best learning process, is to go back and look at it and say, hey, listen, this is the reason you did. You need to have this around you and then implement it. So when I came into this job, I needed the Scott Walkers of the world. I needed the Ryan Jankowskis, the Daryl Plandowskis, you know, all these people around you that are hockey people that can get you to see things through different eyes.
I feel like you could get Keith Kachuk to go back to Arizona, couldn't you?
No, Big Walt's the man. I mean, I funny story, people used to come up and he used to say, this is my boss. And I would say, nobody, he doesn't work for me. Nobody can manage Keith Kachuk. I actually work for him. But yeah, Walt's a man. He's a good man. He's actually a really gifted scout. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for what he does.
I remember once when he was scouting, I texted him, you know, you like to get the input of scouts and people are so much smarter than I in that. So I texted him something and his response was like, I don't effing care. And I'm like, okay, I guess he's not going to be a scout. I'm going to be getting a lot of insight. Yeah. He's just not going to engage in that conversation.
He's an interesting guy because he's got two kids that play in the NHL. He still scouts. You know, and his daughter's really good at field hockey too. So he's also a great dad. He's a great person. I didn't know him going in there, but we've had some great conversations. You know, and he's a master in the room of putting down everybody else's players and building up his, and doing it in a great way. That's great. And the guys that would come into the room for scouting with Walt, they'd be like, oh, I'm such a big fan of yours. You know, so glad to work with you. Like an hour into the meeting, I'm like, how do you feel about him now? After he insulted every one of your players, you know? But yeah, he's a gifted scout. He's a great hockey person.
Is he a good scout? I would have no idea.
He is.
He's a good scout?
He is a really good scout. Sometimes guys don't translate when you're a superstar in the NHL and then you come into
work.
Right,
that's what I would, yeah.
He's got great eyes. He sees the game. And he's had kids that go through it. I think that helps you too. I think that makes you better when your kids go through the process too. But he is one of the top end guys, top end scout for sure.
Awesome. Well, Bill, you got a ton going on, so I appreciate you carving out this time. This was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for having me on, and I wish you guys the best, and let's touch base in the future.
All right, sounds good. Thanks
all right.
a lot.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I want to thank Bill Armstrong for joining the podcast. That was a great conversation. I love nerding out about scouting, and I hope we didn't get too in the weeds there, because I just like philosophy, and anytime you get that kind of time with somebody who has a track record of success like Bill does, it's really cool to learn from that. I'd never even heard the concept of the 2 year versus 10 year scout experience. Maybe that's common in scouting, but I love that stuff. And so, Bill, thank you so much for the time again. That was fantastic. Before we wrap up, the podcast lineup this week at The Athletic in the hockey space is ridiculous. Jeremy Rutherford had Alex Pietrangelo on, only the biggest name right now in free agency, and he did a little bit of a goodbye to Blues fans. I would encourage you to check that out. Mike Russo had Cam Talbot on. Cam, who is actually, we did that bonus episode with Cam when he was trying to save the hockey program in Alabama. Cam is awesome. Check that out. We got Scott and Pierre on Two Man Advantage talking about all the crazy moves going on. Taylor Hall's surprising deal with the Sabres. Pietrangelo to the Golden Knights. So much going on. I would definitely check that out. We've got podcasts from on the Canucks, on the Leafs, so much great stuff. So if you are a fan of hockey podcasts, I would hope you enjoy that. And if you want to listen to these podcasts, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify and you want to listen ad-free, make sure you're subscribing to The Athletic. You can get a cheaper subscription if you go to theathletic.com/full60. Listeners get a discount there. You can listen to all these podcasts ad-free on our app. You can get all the great hockey content that's being provided right now. So much good stuff with the draft wrapped up and free agency and all the trades that are happening and still to come, I promise. So go to theathletic.com/full60. And as always, if you can review and rate this podcast on Apple Podcasts, that helps me a ton, and I appreciate it. Thanks again to Bill for joining the podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a great week.